The Song of Zazen by Hakuin Nekhaku Zenji. Sentient beings are primarily all Buddhas. It is like ice and water. Apart from water, no ice can exist. Outside sentient beings, where do we find the Buddhas? Not knowing how near the truth is, we seek it far away. What a pity. We are like a man who in the midst of water cries in thirst so imploringly. We are like the son of a rich man who wandered away among the poor. The reason why we transmigrate through the six worlds is that we are lost in the darkness of ignorance, going astray further and further in the darkness. When are we able to be free from birth and death? As for Zazen practice in the Mahayana, we have no words to praise it fully. The virtues of perfection, such as charity, morality, and the invocation of the Buddha's name, confession, and ascetic discipline, and many other good deeds of merit, all these return into this. Even those who have practiced it for just one sitting will see all their evil karma erased. Nowhere will they find evil paths, but the pure land will be near at hand. With a reverential heart, if we listen to this truth even once and praise it and gladly embrace it, we will surely be blessed most infinitely. But if we concentrate within and testify to the truth that self-nature is no nature, then we really have gone beyond foolish talk. The gate of the oneness of cause and effect is opened. The path of non-duality and non-trinity runs straight ahead. To regard the form of no form as form, whether going or returning, we cannot be any place else. To regard the thought of no thought as thought, whether singing or dancing, we are the voice of the Dharma. How boundless the cleared sky of samadhi, how transparent the perfect moonlight of the fourfold wisdom. At this moment, what more need we seek? As the truth eternally reveals itself, this very place is the lotus land of purity. This very body is the body of the Buddha. Good morning. Welcome to Wildflower Zendo, where the flowers are all wild. Today we have some guests that from quite far away. You had a long drive, right?
About an hour and 45 minutes.
An hour and 45 minutes. Yeah. And you guys, would you introduce yourselves? And you're going to be married on the 22nd of September in a Zen wedding. So welcome to our small Zendo. we are always open to guests, and people are always welcome to join us. I had sort of promised to do a Dharma 101 talk today, but I see I've only got a half an hour, so I was planning on speaking for about 3.5 hours and compressing it somewhat, so I'll brief it up. What is Buddhism? Zm. It's sort of like many other isms. In one respect, and yet in another, it is like none of these things. Really, the notion of Buddhism is a non-Buddhistic notion. The notion of a Buddhist is a non-Buddhistic notion. The notion of a non-Buddhist is a non-Buddhistic notion. The Buddha's words on enlightenment went something like this: lo and behold, all beings are fundamentally Buddha. Wonder of wonders, all beings are fundamentally Buddha. The term Buddha itself means awakened. It's sort of like, holy smoke, we're all awake. That kind of a thing. So often I deal with, in prisons in particular, we deal with prison chaplains and administrators who want Buddhism or any tradition very clearly defined and delineated, and they want to know, when is someone a Buddhist, and what is a non-Buddhist, and you know, all of these things. And I mean, I have to go in and tell them, well, first of all, there's no such thing as a non-Buddhist. We're all Buddhists. But, well, fundamentally, we're all awake. Fundamentally, there are no non-Buddhists. Actually, the term Buddhist itself is irrelevant. We're all alive. Human beings, all Buddhas. So the notion of some kind of division between Buddhists and non-Buddhists is really a false notion and only a expedient handle on which to objectify reality. The Buddhist tradition is a 2,500-year-old noble tradition that has come down through various schools, various approaches over the centuries. The school that this particular Zendo comes through is the Rinzai Zen School, which is a Japanese school of Mahayana Buddhism in the Zen tradition. There are many different flavors of Buddhism and colors. Oftentimes people, I've had the incidents within the prisons where people have asked, well, what is Buddhism? And I mean, what does a Buddhist do? What does a Buddhist believe? As though all Buddhists were of one particular flavor or variety. And I have to tell them that, you know, Buddhism, there are as many schools, if not more schools in Buddhism than there are in Christianity. And the perspective, the spectrum of Christianity extends from, you know, snake handlers in the Tennessee mountains all the way up to the Vatican. And there's every shade and flavor and texture of Christianity in between. Very much the same in Buddhism. There are many different traditions, many different schools, many different flavors. Many of these have developed through different cultures. We are in the development stages here in America of distinctly American-flavored Buddhism. It's not going to happen for a long time because we are because of the source of the teachings coming through Oriental cultures. We still have elements of those cultures that are incorporated within the various traditions as they are presently practiced in contemporary America. This will change. The form of Buddhism that we see now is very different from that which is practiced in the Orient. The form of Buddhism that will be practiced in the West in 100 years is significantly different from what we're practicing now. It will change. Elements of the indigenous culture will be incorporated within the tradition, and in ways that we cannot even speculate on. We really can't. Many of us, from people that have been involved within Buddhism for, you know, decades, you know, we've all gone through this idea of having a concept of what American Buddhism is going to be, and invariably after 25 years you realize, oh, maybe it's not going to be that way at all. So you finally come to the point where you sort of give up on the idea of creating it and sort of let it develop by itself. It's like, you know, we have you know, some kind of idea that we're going to create a topiary Buddhism, that by, you know, somehow clipping the branches we're going to create some kind of structure out of this thing, but it's wild. It's a wild flower. It's going to grow whether we do something to it or not. You know, so perhaps it's best just to let it grow and see what happens. Buddhism is very, very different from any of the traditions within the Western religious spectrum. It is a non-dogmatic tradition. It is very much a do-it-yourself practice tradition. In Zen, in particular, is a tradition of practice. It is, there are different approaches in Buddhism. Some schools have devotional approaches. Other schools have intellectual approaches. Other schools have practice approaches. The Zen school is fundamentally a practice school. It is about doing the actual practice of the Buddha, and the emphasis is on doing it yourself, working it out for yourself. There's not much in terms of intellectual study of the sutras or things of this nature. I had a letter from a prisoner this past week, and he wants a copy of the Pali Canon in his cell. He says, we've only got a limit that we can only have 5 books in our cells at a time, and I want the Pali Canon. Well, if we were lucky, we could probably fit the Pali Canon in this room because there are 64,000 volumes in it. It literally takes up an entire room. And I've seen these in the Theravadan monasteries. They will literally have, you know, a whole library with just the Pali Canon in it. Do we need this to practice the tradition? Well, no. Did the Buddha have it? No. All he had was a pile of straw and grass that he sat on and his robe and bowl. You know, bare essentials within the tradition. I mean, fundamentally, we need life itself. We need to be alive to practice. But not much more than that. Right? We don't, there's a sutra called the Kalima Sutra, which is the Buddha's sutra on free inquiry. And within that, he gives instructions as to how do we know what the truth is? How do we make informed decisions as to the nature of the teachings? And what do we depend on? What do we listen to? Well, he says you don't listen to doctrine. Don't accept sutras just because they're sutras. Just because they come out of a holy book. Don't accept what some monk says just because he has a bald head and a robe. Don't accept what an authority says just because they're an authority. Don't accept what a monk says just because he's a monk. Don't accept what a government official says just because he's a government official. Don't accept the monastic party line just because it comes from the monastery. Don't accept things because they're common knowledge. Don't accept things because your friends tell you that's the way things are. All of the Buddhist sutras that come down from Ananda begin with the words, "Thus have I heard." Not "this is the way it is." "Thus have I heard." I heard this somewhere. Not "this is the way it is." This is just something I heard. Now, if that's a value, fine. If not, that's okay too. Ultimately, what the Buddha is saying in his Sutra on Free Inquiry is figure it out for yourself. You are responsible for determining the nature of truth. You are responsible, and you are obligated to determine the nature of your reality. You create your reality, you create your worldview. And in your heart, in your your gut level, you are ultimately responsible for determining reality. There is no dogma within the Buddhist tradition. There is no belief within the Zen tradition. Belief is merely a mental process that involves placing faith in the unknown. Just because it says something in a sutra does not necessarily involve the belief process at all. "Thus have I heard." I heard this somewhere. You check it out and determine whether it's valid. That's your responsibility. That's your obligation. You're accountable for your own reality. Buddhism is a do-it-yourself tradition. So we have this guy, this Buddha, who is called the awakened one. Something happened through his introspective sitting practice. When we read the Heart Sutra, we find that Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion, doing deep prajna paramita. Prajna paramita means transcending wisdom. transcending wisdom practice, wisdom that transcends our deluded perspectives, wisdom that transcends our common view. Doing deep transcending wisdom practice. Doing deep zazen. Doing deep sitting in dynamic stillness. Doing deep introspective contemplation. And it's almost a geometric process, a folding of the mind itself in on itself. We can almost visualize it as a geometric transformation. A lot of times we see pictures of the lotus within Buddhist iconography, and the folding and the shape of the lotus very much resembles this almost geometric structure of the mind as it folds in on itself in contemplative practice. In our daily life, in the life out there, the secular life of this materialistic world in which we live, we're constantly going out, all the time, you know, receiving input from what we think are outside sources. When we come into this room, into this zendo, when we sit down in our posture at home, when we take part in our actual practice, what we do is we sit down, we compose our posture, we develop our regal posture, and at that point with our breathing, we begin by turning the mind in on itself, a self-examination process. So this is the basis for Buddhist practice. There are teachings, there is doctrine, all of which is available and present for examination. You know, we hear things like the Four Noble Truths. Well, the Four Noble Truths are sort of corollaries on paper or verbal descriptions, and given the Buddha's instructions and given our own responsibility to ourselves, we take those truths and examine them through questioning. We inquire. You know, we hear life is suffering, life is dukkha, life is fundamentally dissatisfactory at its core. Okay, how is life like that? How is my life like that? Each moment, how is each moment like that? Is this really the way life is? Can it be another way? Are there other possibilities? Is this really true? Just because it's one of the four noble truths doesn't mean it's true. It means we have a responsibility to determine whether it's true or not. Don't just accept things. Intensely question. This is the process of Buddhism. This is the do-it-yourself-ness of the tradition. Question, question, question. Any questions? So, when you read about Buddhism, it seems like it's true, and it's hard to question it. Well, this is, I think, this is the nature of reading anything. Don't believe everything you read. Just because it's written and, you know, has good grammar and syntax and, you know, has good vocabulary doesn't necessarily mean that it's true at all. As uncomfortable as it may be to be truly responsible and to be truly honest, questioning is the name of the game. Well, since there are no more questions, and we're about out of time, thank you all for coming. Thank you for your attention. And we're about to begin our closing chanting. So thank you all.